The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rox from Ensemble, and I'm thrilled to be bringing to you the podcast Engine Room. It's devoted entirely to the practices or the business of financial advice. Over the course of the next many months, we're going to be interviewing Australia's best independent boutique advice firms, their practice managers, their GMs, on what environment is conducive to being a best practice, how they keep talent, how they attract talent, and what the future of financial advice is. It's the Engine Room Podcast. Welcome aboard. I'm Andrew Rox, and welcome to another edition of The Engine Room. I am in downtown, is it Hawthorn or Camberwell? It's Camberwell, I'm with the one and the only Billy Amroudis from 360 Financial Strategist. Andrew, welcome to the mic.
Andrew, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to having a good chat with you today and chatting a little bit about our practice, financial advice, and what the future holds.
And you're no stranger to podcasting. You've got a podcast that you've been doing for, is it 4 or 5 years?
It has been, yes. We still release that each and every week.
And what's it called?
It's the 360 Money Matters Podcast.
360 Money Matters Podcast. We're not the ABC. We're allowed to cross-promote here. I'll put the link in the notes, and that's specifically for topics out to your clients or potential clients.
Yeah, exactly right. And it started as almost a kind of like a side project out of the back of COVID because we had so much time on our hands. I got into listening to a whole heap of podcasts and thought, oh, yeah, this is fantastic. What can we do for our clients? And help sort of spread the word a little bit about what financial advice is and really try and break it down into some easy to understand topics and concepts for people. Short, sharp, 20-minute episodes we release once a week across a whole broad range of topics. And, it's a bit of fun that we have along the way as well.
So if you're a young parent, you can put your kid in front of Bluey for 20 minutes. You can crack open one of these podcasts and you both can learn and earn. So I think the more financial literacy to the general public, the better, but also the more articulating the value of financial advice, because there's still a disconnect between what people want from a financial planner and what they're prepared to pay. So it's good to be melding those together. But I'm here in your wonderful office, but you've only just moved to this office, is that right?
Well, we've been here for about a year and a half, but we just recently moved to a bigger suite just because we've outgrown the previous one. So we've always been, and we'll talk a little bit about our backstory and stuff, but we've always been sort of the eastern side of Melbourne. So we're located in Camberwell, not for any particular reason other than the scientific calculation that when we first started the business, so myself and my business partner looked at a map of Melbourne and basically plotted two spots and drew a line, straight line between the two. And halfway point was kind of Camberwell, Hawthorn, Richmond. And that's where the office kind of went.
And which side do you live on?
So I'm the northern suburbs. Yeah, the southern suburbs.
Okay.
And that's basically how we ended up with this. But yeah, we've been in this particular office for about a year and a half at the Waterman's workspace in Camberwell.
Yep.
And the flexibility it allows, because we can have meetings all over Melbourne. We've got access to meeting rooms and offices. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty central. And there's you know, the reason I'm in town is there's quite a few practices within, you know, 4 or 5 kilometres, and it's sort of outside the CBD, so parking's a bit easier, I think, for some clients. Is that right?
Yep, most definitely, yeah.
And so tell me, you're a Victorian born and bred?
I am, yeah, born in Melbourne. Yeah, basically been here my whole life. Grew up here. We've got some family sort of interstate and bits and pieces, but Melbourne is where home is for us, and this is where the business is, raising our kids, and yeah, this is it.
And I thank you for being one of the very few Melbourne-bought businesses that I've been into that doesn't have a framed Aussie rules jersey there, which is the passion is always, coming from New South Wales, the passion's always sort of hits me in the face, which is good, right? It's good to be passionate.
So I look 100%, but that's the that's the sport down here. It seems to be AFL, but no, not necessarily for us too much. So,
and tell me, you've got your four quals now, but when did you start thinking about getting into financial advice? Because you've had this business for 15 years, is that right?
Yes, correct. Yep.
And you're a CFP, so you've been through all the hoops.
Yep.
But what made you become a financial planner?
Yeah, so my my entry into the industry was quite an interesting one. Let's rewind back to, I guess, the start of my working career. And this was at the time when AMP were demutualizing and they were advertising on TV a fair bit. So being a young kid entering into the workforce, my employer asked me and said, you need a super fund. I didn't know any different and basically said, yep, get me one of those because they're on TV and what have you. And I was in my mid-20s and a financial advisor that was assigned to my policy actually picked up the phone and rang me.
Right.
Harry Maragos was the man. Still good mates with Harry today.
Yep.
He is my mum's, used to be my parents, but my mum's financial advisor. We still chat every couple of months and stuff.
Fantastic
guy. Love him to bits. But basically, he picked up the phone. We did a whole heap of work together. So I became a client of his.
Yep.
And was
what was your job at the time? That
so I was a production manager working in the manufacturing industry.
Okay.
So completely different fields. We were doing some great work together and I was increasing my knowledge and always had a real thirst for increasing my knowledge and especially around personal finance. It was sort of something of mine that I always enjoyed. And at the time, I kind of figured, yeah, the work that I'm doing with Harry is fantastic, but I'd love to learn a little bit more. At that time, Open Universities of Australia was kind of just getting big and they had a course in financial advice, a Bachelor of Business in Financial Advice. Fast forward a handful of years, I enrolled in that course, started studying that. My business that I was in, I orchestrated an exit with my then business partner.
And that was, I'm reading your LinkedIn, that was Marble Tech's Glass.
That's exactly
so right. Was that like, I mean, I was going to, can I do a full transparency gag with a glass business? So was that a family business or because it, you would have been quite young in 2003.
It was a family business
right.
That I bought into.
What's it do? What part of the?
So essentially when a building goes up
yeah.
And an aluminium fabricator goes to, you know, say, okay, we need 20 windows or yep. we need 200 windows or what have you, this size. This type of glass, what have you, we would then cut to size, ready for installation, those glass panels. So it was essentially, yeah, basically taking glass and getting it ready for yep. installation in yep. that regard.
Literally measuring twice, cutting once.
Yeah,
if really, you didn't do that, you would be in a world of hurt.
Really unforgiving building substance, but that did set the foundation for a lot of the, I guess, the skill set that brought me into our business now. And a lot of those things that I learned then, I can apply now. But
you'd have to have an eye for detail. I mean, we've all seen those tragic grand design shows where the glass comes in and they're...
Yeah,
15 mil big.
Can't do anything about it half the time. But yeah, orchestrated a buyout with my business partner, who was my brother at the time.
Yep.
So I left that business. And then I hadn't completed. So what was next for me?
Yeah,
I wanted to get into financial advice. I hadn't completed my Bachelor of Business yet. So I didn't have any quals to get into industry. So what I did do is I paused my Bachelor of Business. I then studied a diploma in financial planning.
Yep.
Basically fast-tracked that, did it over a couple of weeks and then applied for and got in to the, it was the AMP Horizons Career Changer Program at the time.
Because finishing the Diploma of Financial Planning back in the late noughties, that was the highest education.
That was it.
And then you did a CFP program after that or something, I think.
Yeah, so finished the Bachelor, did my FCHFP
yep.
With the AFA at the time,
yep.
Completed my Masters of Financial Planning and then just recently got my CFP as well.
Congratulations. What a journey, eh?
Yeah, just pushed that the whole way. And look, a little bit of it was driven out of just uncertainty in terms of where the education standard was going. But also above and beyond that, I wanted to lead by example with our team to basically say, hey, if I can do it, then there's no reason why you guys can't do it as well too. And they've responded in kind, which has been fantastic.
And off mic, earlier you were talking about and you said, I really want to focus on, I've got this great associate program, bringing new people through and sort of we need entrance in. You had this real passion and we are definitely going to cover that. But in 2011, 2012, you were part of the AMP Horizons
yes.
program, which, you know, we're 25 years on from that. And isn't that what they were doing all the way back then? But they were one of the real vehicles. I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed successful business owners and they started there.
Yep.
Don't know whether AMP should be happy or sad with that, but nevertheless, it was a fact.
Oh, look, it's amazing how it comes full circle, right? I mean, we're looking at it as an industry now, and there's a lot of talk in the media around how do we bring in more entrants into the market. Obviously, the market's gone through what it has in terms of advisor numbers and things. And obviously, we're looking at it as an industry going, okay, how do we get more people interested into financial advice, and how do we create a sustainable model that allows those people to come into industry? And you're right, it does go full circle. Obviously, the way that revenue enters practices' pockets have changed over time, and we need to adapt accordingly. But yeah, you're right, it's come full circle, and we're asking the same question. So I think all in all, they probably should be proud.
Yeah, and so it's interesting. Effectively, your upbringing was in your family were in small, were at their own business.
Yep.
Is that right?
So, yeah,
and that's the same as mine. So, those kinds of childhoods where at any stage you can be asked to go down to the factory and load a truck up with your cousin, your uncle, your father, your mother, or something like that. You just did it. It was just part of it. That kind of self-employed mentality. Probably is the reason that you were in Horizons for a pretty short period before you went out and said, no, I'm going to kick my own one off. Is that right?
Yeah. So what had happened is Horizons, so that career changer program was a 12-month program, 12-month contract. You do your 12 months. It's basically a boot camp to get into finance.
But you were always going to have your own business. Was that your mentality?
It definitely was.
Right.
I loved my time at Horizons, but I hated being an employee. It just wasn't for me. And what had happened is I had met my future business partner at Horizon. So Mish Bletcher, he was going through something similar in terms of transitioning careers. He came from a mortgage broking aggregator background and was looking for something different. We became good mates. We were hanging out a fair bit. And basically, we got about halfway through, started having a conversation around, okay, we're halfway through. What are you going to do in 6 months' time? What are you going to do in 6 months' time? I never wanted to work for anybody. I wanted to start my own thing. He was always an employee and wanted to start his own thing. We had similar work expectations, similar work ethic, but different backgrounds. And we thought, hey, we've got something special here. If we combine these two, we actually really think we can give this a shot. So from that perspective, we basically said, okay, let's start working on a business plan. And then day one, once we finished out of Horizons, 360 was born.
And given your age now, you would have been mid-20s. Is that right? Mid to late 20s when that was the case.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate the fact that you think I look younger than I am, but I was late 20s, early 30s.
Right.
My wife, Samantha, when we moved to Horizons, so this was in Sydney, so I'm Victorian based in Melbourne. My wife had just given birth to our son. He was 6 months old. So basically we had to pack everything up, move to Sydney, do the 12-month course Horizons essentially boot.
Shout out, Samantha.
And she never lets me forget it as well. So, and then essentially out of the back of that, I then dropped the bomb on her and said, hey, I want to start my own business. So that whole journey was quite volatile for her, to say the least.
Yeah, look, my wife, I mean, there's nothing more reassuring and comfortable than saying we're just going to ditch our safety net.
That's it.
And also I might need to borrow some.
Yeah, exactly. But no, she believed in me probably more so than I believed in myself at times. But looking back, that was the right decision to make. We haven't looked back and been really fortunate for her support along the way. But Mish and I started the business from day one and, yeah, basically are still operating as business partners together.
So what was that first day like? So you say you've rocked up in your suit because she would have been trained to wear a suit, looking at each other going, oh, we haven't got a client.
Yeah.
What happened?
What do we do now? Actually, it wasn't.
Did you have a coffee?
It wasn't as scary as that. I mean, look, we put a lot into, what do we do?
Yeah.
Who do we contact? So we did have a little bit of an idea about where we'd get business from. So we had.
And what was that?
We did have a bit of a backup, but I don't know if you recall or what it was like for us when you first have your kids and stuff and, you're at the hospital and at night, if you need help, you press a little buzzer on the wall and the nurse will come in and stuff. And then you get home with your newborn and you're like, geez, the buzzer's gone. We didn't have any of that. So it was just like, we have to, if we want something to happen, we have to make it happen ourselves. So it was, we had a list of people in terms of clients that we could hit up, and that was more family and friends.
Yep.
We had a list of professional associates that we knew.
But at this stage, you personally had a few years of doing the education, being involved, so people knew that you were serious.
Yeah.
You were putting in the time.
I had 1 year as a financial advisor.
Yep.
Actually, even less, because you're not a financial advisor as soon as you start that program. It takes time to do it. It was a really short period of time, but people did know that I was serious. We threw everything at it. We didn't put sort of 1 foot in and 1 foot out. We basically transitioned directly from our employment arrangement that we had to being self-employed on that first day. We weren't working part-time anywhere else. It was just all or nothing, essentially.
So I'm picturing you both You're at AMP Horizons. They're giving you training. They're teaching you soft skills. They're doing the things that they were known for doing. They've suggested that there's been a business model for financial planners of AMP for 100 and something years.
Yep.
You rock out in May 2012, and about a month later, FAFA hits and says, you know all the things you learn about the economic engine, what we're going to do is we're going to do like a six-year program of winding back all of that.
Yeah.
Did you have any second thoughts?
Look, no, because, look, and I don't want to sound cliche about this, but and maybe it comes from a self-employed business background, but you've got to have that belief in yourself. And, you know, you can have the best laid plans. And I kind of use an analogy, and I talk in these concepts because I'm so used to explaining things to clients and things like that. But you have these really well laid plans. But if the environment changes, you've just got to pivot. And the example that I use is, let's say we're standing on a riverbank and we want to swim across to the other side. And we're like, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to jump in here. We're going to swim over to that side. And then, like, if the current changes or conditions change, you have to pivot. So from our perspective, we were committed. Whatever the industry threw at us, we'd have to pivot and we'd have to change. And probably to a certain extent, because we were so new to the industry, we didn't know any better anyway. So we had to make do, and that was just normal for us. So we're kind of almost fortunate that change was always constant in our industry when we were in it. And that's held us in really good stead, that we have to expect change to happen all of the time. And that's kind of how we think about, you know, our plans and our strategy moving forward.
The genesis of Ensemble, which was XY Advisor, were four Horizons advisors who went out, spent 2 years, hit FOFA, and then we need to talk more to each other. And they started it. So it was a good time for that. And so your business partner, Mishu, who's working pretty hard so we can swan around doing this as we speak, he was doing financial advice, but you are a definite financial advice and mortgage advice combo business. Is that correct? Is that the best way to explain it?
Yeah, correct. So sort of going back a little bit, so Mish came from a mortgage aggregator. So he was with Australian Financial. That was his background before he entered.
Because AMP has a Horizon broking licenses as well.
Yeah, correct. So he always had a broking background. He was more in the BDM space as opposed to a broker. When we started the business, it was purely just financial advice. And in terms of the people that we serve and help, and we'll talk a little bit about that in some more detail, but most of those people in that demographic have debt.
Yep.
So for us, it was kind of a natural progression. So the first couple of years we were spending on just getting the practice right and trying to figure out, you know, what was what from a financial advice perspective. And then what we did do strategically, we added mortgage broking advice into the practice and into the capability. So most of the people that we are sitting with that have a need across sort of both spectrums, we can help them with that. Where it sits today, even though I'm accredited as a financial advisor and a mortgage broker, I don't really do anything from a mortgage broking perspective. And from Mish's end, essentially what we've done is basically separated the business in two, where he's basically just sticking with mortgage broking and I'm sticking specifically with financial advice.
Yeah, well, we'll talk in a second about how the clients come through and how that sort of is done in a really professional way, making the clients feel the center of the universe, so to speak. But you mentioned your very tolerant and understanding wife. How many kids do you have now?
So I've got two, so 15 and 12, so year 10 and just started year 7 this year.
And what do you do outside of work to blow some steam off?
So try to get to the gym 3 or 4 days a week. That's probably the first thing, and I try and stick to that as best as I can. That's kind of my time that I get to myself. If I do have a little bit more time, I'm a bit of a tragic golf player. So I tend to get out on the golf course, and I keep telling people I'm a really good golfer because I get a high score.
Yeah, yeah, that's there's a few people on that boat.
And they're probably the sort of the two things that I do for myself. As a family, we like to travel a fair bit. We've got family interstate, so both family in Tasmania and also Brisbane. So for us, whenever it's time to leave the house and go and see someone, we're either heading north to Brisbane or south to Tasmania. Amongst all of that, and then driving the kids around with school and dancing and sports and bits and pieces.
So you're in the trenches. You're in the high school.
Yep.
Trenches in the same zone. I'm just at the tail end of it, and I don't think you ever spend more money in your life because you're in that sort of pincer movement. So no, it is good to do other things. And a quick question, and Mish is not here to sort of counter it, but how you've basically you've got you've been married. Business partners for 13
or 15 years. Is there any structure or strategies that you guys have? Because it's just the two of you, and how do you get to a stage where you don't come to a fork in the road and you vote one way each? Like, what's the way in which you resolve and move forward with business strategy?
Yeah, so look, I don't want to simplify this, but there was a lot of thinking that, I guess, when we first started the business, that was something that was well and truly on our minds, because you don't know how that's going to actually translate when the rubber hits the road, so to speak. So what we did, we had a really honest conversation around what it looks like in terms of responsibilities, how we'd resolve conflict. And essentially what we did is we got to a stage where we brought in an external business coach, and we've been using business coaches pretty much from day one.
Yep.
That basically broke the business down into different segments and different divisions, and we assign those responsibilities to each one of us based on interest, skill set, experience, and basically said, okay, with that particular area of the business, you take charge of it.
Yep.
You've got final say. If you need someone to consult with, I'm here. If it's anything of significance, we make those decisions together. But I must say, and touch wood, we've been pretty fortunate. We haven't really had too much conflict. I think being aligned strategically in terms of where we want the business to go, and also from our work ethic perspective, if you get those things right, then you're all rowing in the same direction. It just makes it a bit easier.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And another thing is you do some tax advisory as well. Is that right?
Look, we do a little bit.
A little bit.
Not too much. So
it's not a big pillar. It's just an option.
Yeah. And look, a lot of that's probably just around, you know, things like superannuation contributions, yep, and trying to massage, you know, someone's tax from that perspective. But what we do try and do is if there is a tax need, we will then take that relationship and refer that on to an accountant that we do business with,
yep,
and try and get clients the right type of advice that they need.
So you've got the clear swim lanes with yourself and your business partner.
Yep.
And have you gone to the extreme of, well, not the extreme, have you got yourself a shareholders agreement and a few other things like that, and buy sales and all the stuff you recommend?
Yep,
okay.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah. So for those of you out there who are contemplating going into business with a family member or a friend or is like-minded, these things need to be front of mind. You need to get yourself that pretty quickly. Yeah.
I can't mimic that sentiment enough, right? Like, everybody talks about the future, and we're quite optimistic as entrepreneurs and wanting to...
It's financial careers.
Right, absolutely. But it's not that necessarily that conversation. It's the opposite conversation. So when it gets hard, when things go wrong, how are we going to approach it?
Yeah.
What do we do? If you're going through a certain life stage and you need to back out of the business a little bit because, you know, you might be having a child or relationship issues or whatever it is, how do I then support you? What's the expectation around remuneration, responsibilities? Like, you need to get all of that stuff out on the table and make sure that you're completely comfortable with it before you progress. Because like anything, like the advice that we give, if you've got the wrong structure, if something happens, eventually that's gonna fall apart.
And that's the sort of stuff that you tackle with your business coach. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
In the early days, it was. Yeah. Now it's a lot more strategic and tactical.
Yeah. So I'm going to come back to the sort of the way in which you run your business and you know, the impact of the business coach and just the patterns and which ones you like using and whatnot. Because the biggest takeout is young people. If people are young or young in their business journey, they need to, I suppose, allow themselves to get some guidance. Because yes, what we're doing is unique, but you can learn from other people's history and mistakes. There's absolutely. So the business structure that you've got now, you've mentioned sort of the way in which you've got those two pillars, but how's the organization structure work? Do clients come in? Take us through, as mortgage clients that have become financial planning clients or the other way around? I did take a photo in your office on the way here, which was how many what your target was.
Yep. Our BHAG.
Yep. And by 2035, there's some pretty ambitious numbers, and I'm going to let you own these numbers, but there was almost a one-to-one correlation between financial planning clients and mortgage broker clients.
Yeah, correct. Yep. So from our perspective, I mean, pretty straightforward, even though you called them two different swim lanes, we are one business. We operate under, you know, the one ABN, the one trading entity. We do split it out from a profit and loss statement perspective as well too, just so we can track the performance of the business. So that's you know, nothing too spectacular there. But the way that clients come into the business, it really can be anything.
But how is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Typically.
So it could be that somebody comes in specifically for a debt need.
Yep.
And they come to us and say, hey, I'm looking at upgrading, want to get a pre-approval, figure out my borrowing capacity, what have you. So,
but is that from your marketing with your podcast or?
There's a whole range of different areas. Yeah. So majority of it is client referrals.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously some external stuff that we're doing, podcasts, this type of activity. The podcast, this type of activity, any external marketing that we're doing, so stuff on Facebook, paid advertising, bits and pieces like that as well too, and professional relationships from other, accountants.
So they might come in with a couple of hot buttons.
Correct. So it could be either advice or it could be debt.
So save you through it. Let's go. So I'm coming in and, as you've said, I'm coming in because I'm thinking about your home loan or I've got one or I'm thinking about buying something and I've got these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not advised. Yep. Clearly, I'm not. Yep. I mean, I've looked at you. I'm not a financial advised client. What's the steps that you take, and how do you? Because the end product is they become a holistic
correct
client.
Yep.
So take us through how that works.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's predominantly driven by the client. So however they want to engage with us, they can. But let's use the example at some point.
They're not going to say, "I'll give me debt," and also I want my full estate plan done in life insurance. You've got to lead them on a bit.
I'll give you an example, right? So you might get a client that says, "Okay, we want to upgrade the family home," right? So they come in, they get a pre-approval, understand what their serviceability is. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. We know how that works. The mortgage broking team will then identify and discuss with the client and say, "Hey, one of the things that we've identified, as an example, you're going to increase your debt by 600 grand. Have you got enough life insurance?" As an example, okay, fantastic. There's an issue that needs to be addressed. Or it could be, Billy, you've come in for a mortgage. You're 46 today. If we get you a 30-year mortgage, you're going to be 76 by the time you pay it off.
Still no gray hair.
Thank you. We need to have a chat about that with one of our financial advisors because you don't want to have debt by the time you're 76 and then it can roll into other things around, retirement planning and the like. So normally it's something like that. The mortgage brokers will identify one or two things and then facilitate an introduction to the financial advice team.
And that in that context, it must really help the Mish has been on both sides of the ledger because those training people and training brokers to identify those things is really critical. For those listening, it's actually a requirement that a mortgage broker, not just Billy's, but any mortgage broker, identifies insurance needs.
Yep.
So it's one of the really overlooked parts of mortgage broking. If you're out there, if a mortgage broker's out there saying, "Give me some clients, I want some referrals from your practice," if you don't have it in house. Mm-hmm. Ask them and say, "Hey, I hear that you have to say this every time.
Yep.
I would like some back, please."
Yeah. And look, I almost say to our mortgage broking team that, we're facilitating a process where we're getting people into debt, right?
Yeah, we're making problems.
We have a responsibility here to make sure that they know that, hey, there's a potential issue here.
Yeah.
Talk to one of our financial advisors and they'll talk to you about that. So we use one or two things to try and get them, obviously, to have a conversation with the other part of the business.
Yeah.
And then from there, the advisor in this instance would then go through, their scenario and talk about a whole range of different things.
Well let's be frank around when a client comes in and you do a consult with mortgage broking, you may or may not charge a small fee. And that's really depending on your business model. But it's definitely not going to be 18 hours of work like an SOA and all those costs. So do you at what stage do you introduce the client who's coming in to the mortgage who started answering those leading questions around yes, to the concept that a full financial plan is X thousand dollars? In fact, what's the average charge for an upfront for planning for you?
Yeah, look, I mean, our minimum pricing starts from $3,500 plus GST.
Yeah.
So we've done that specifically because we're trying to keep the price point a little bit lower. So our target market, essentially, call it the wealth accumulator segment.
Yep.
35 to 55-year-old, working busy families. Essentially, that's our sweet spot. Look, I'd love to say that there's a magical point in time when that tends to happen. The mortgage brokers, as you can imagine, want to secure the deal that they're working on.
It's their job.
That's exactly their job, right? So they're not getting paid unless they facilitate a loan. So they want to secure that and make sure that that's underway before they then push it across to financial planning, before Billy and the team hit them with a fee estimate.
Yep.
So we're working on trying to get that tighter and tighter, but it's one of those things. And it's just the very nature of the industry. Mortgage broking is one of those things that is the fee for service doesn't really exist quite widespread within the industry
yet.
Yeah. Some brokers do it, a lot don't.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I kind of almost think it's a bit of a race to the bottom, and they tend to pull it down. I think it will improve as time goes on. And then on the flip side, it's like, okay, we can do all of this great stuff from a financial advice perspective. Chances are it's going to, well, definitely going to cost you money. But in terms of you taking action, it's also going to cost you money as well.
That's right.
Accelerated debt repayments, more contributions into super, investments for your kids, so on and so forth. Not only is there an advice fee, but I'm gonna hack into your cash flow as well too.
Yeah. So and you know, my previous history, I had a business that looked very similar to yours, where we had both disciplines. The wonderful thing is that once they become a financial planning client, and you have to do the annual plans or opt in or whatever the sort of terminology you use is, that by keeping on top of their lending, you never lose them as a lending client. So a lot of lending clients who just do broking, they quite often will drift off.
Yeah.
But you and you've got a vested interest. So, you know, I always used to laugh. The planner would go to the broker on the review and go, how much more money do I have in the budget? Are you know, how much of a reduction do we get off the loan? And we even like had a plot on the wall, like money saved off home loans for financial planners to invest in more stuff.
Yeah. And look, I mean, the concept and the way that we explain it is your surplus, and where do you direct that surplus? That's the thing that's going to move the needle from a wealth perspective. But look, it works really well. A lot of the clients that we're dealing with, and especially in an interest rate environment where rates are going up, cash flow is such a critical element, and the mortgage specifically, because it's taking such a big chunk of their income. It's just a no-brainer from our perspective, and it works really, really well. We've been running that model for quite some time, and essentially have those two lanes.
And what's the ratio of entry points?
In terms of size of the business, financial advice is about two times bigger than mortgage broking, so it's essentially two-thirds, one-third.
Yep.
But over time, that is shifting.
Yep.
So mortgage broking is bringing on clients just naturally because it tends to happen, and you can onboard clients faster.
Yep.
But mortgage broking is bringing on clients faster than financial planning. So over time, that percentage will change.
And maybe for the audience, what is this BHAG of a target that you've got in 2035?
So we did a 10-year goal. So this was part of the business planning that we're doing with a business coach of ours, and basically saying, okay.
Do you want to give them a shout out?
Yeah. So we've been working with Scott Weeks from Practical Business Solutions for quite some time now. That's probably spanning a 7 or an 8 year relationship.
Good on you, Scott. Oh, so, very well done.
Scott, I don't know if you know Scott personally and stuff.
No, I don't.
He's an absolute ripper of a guy. Definitely knows his stuff. And
Kieran, we'll even chuck him in the links as well. How's that sound? Feeling very generous today.
Good on you, Roxy. So, it was something that we did essentially last year for our 10-year strategy goal. And we looked at this and said, okay, where do we want to get to from a client number perspective in terms of financial advice, and also from mortgage broking as well? And financial advice was easy to a certain extent, or easier, because you've got your ongoing relationships, and basically said, okay, we want to have
this many retained families. And
we had our target. So it's 2,000 clients in 10 years' time by 2035. So what we looked at it and said, okay, we want to have 10 planners, and essentially they have a book of 200 clients each. With mortgage broking, it was a little bit more difficult because you tend to think about the size of your debt book.
Yep.
We converted that back to client numbers.
Yep.
So from that perspective, it's 2,500 clients that we want to have on our books for mortgage broking.
And we're going to talk in a second about the different valuation metrics between those two and a few other things. So that's your aspiration. Now, let's talk about your organizational structure. Now, how many financial advisors do you have in the business?
Yeah, so we've got three.
Yep.
So we've got myself. We've got Andrew. So he was our number one employee outside of Mish and I. So he was a family friend of Mish's. He was working part-time with us. Andrew and I do the podcast together. But he was working part-time with us when he was at uni studying accounting, saw the light, and decided to become a financial advisor.
Shout out to all the accountants listening.
Andrew also bought in as an equity partner into the financial advice business as well too. So he's a key person in the business. And then we've got Stephanie as well. She's been with us for 7 years. She's an advisor. She's gone through customer service roles, associate advisor roles, and now she's a planner. So there's the three of us.
Yep.
And what sits behind that is we've got an associate model. So Andrew has an associate that sits with him.
Yep.
I've got sort of like a part-time associate. Michelle, she's our customer service manager.
Yep.
She's transitioning into an associate role.
Yep.
And then we'll backfill that position. And then Steph, her book size is a little bit smaller, so she doesn't have an associate. But the idea is that we want to grow our advisor numbers and hit that BHAG goal through our people through an associate program. So we kind of took inspiration from kind of how other industries do it. I know it's a big issue for us as an industry. How do we bring new entrants into the market?
Yep.
How do we get them into a position where that's sustainable from a numbers perspective?
Well, it needs to be sustainable to you in a small business because it's hard.
It's definitely hard. And we're looking at this and, you know, just the way that I guess ongoing service is charged, we're doing it through annual advice agreements and just the whole mechanics that sit behind that. If you don't have it right, it can be very easy to lose client numbers very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So for us, we thought, okay, we're in the business of relationships. How do we do that? Bring in an associate, put them through their paces, essentially a 2 or a 3 year program, depending on where they're at from an experience perspective, get them through their PY, hand over a book of clients essentially that they've worked on over the past couple of years with the advisor, and then they go and start their own journey as a financial advisor.
Saying that fast sounds easy. I'm going to unpack a few. I'm going to unpack a few potential friction points in that.
Conceptually, it's easy.
Yeah. So let's talk about the potential friction points. So first of all, do you have anyone who, do you have like administration to assist them?
Yeah, we do. So what sits behind them? Customer service team.
Yep.
So we have both onshore and offshore. We've been partnering with VBP, Vital Business Partners, for 8 years now. So it's been quite a while. We've got 14 members over there.
And they're working specifically?
They're working specifically for us.
Yeah, okay. And so they're dedicated resources.
Yeah.
Everyone knows in this podcast, I share the same back office as well. In fact, that's where we met Billy.
Yep.
From memory. Yeah. So effectively, it's almost a one-to-one with those. Is that how it operates?
Yeah.
Is it a one-to-one with each one?
They're not pods or we're not specifically a dedicated pod. So the associate is in their own pod.
Gotcha.
But in terms of the support team, it's whoever.
So I've got more confidence now about my next comment. So you've now got and how many hundred families how many families is each one of those sort of units looking after?
Yeah, so we're aiming for 200.
200?
We go back to that BHAG.
Yeah, that's 200. 2000, yeah.
Yeah, so we're,
how far along are you guys so far?
So we're sitting at about 430 at the moment.
Yeah, so you're 115, 120 each.
Yeah.
So you've got two things to do. You've got to get from 120 to 200.
Yep.
And you've got to get from 3 to 10.
Yep.
Okay, so that's breaking it down. I'm an associate and I'm working under you and I do my PY and I want to be an advisor. You want me to be an advisor because if you don't let me do that, I'm going to get poached by someone else, right?
Exactly.
So what I do, I just like, here's the hard bit. So where's the clients come from?
How do we do it?
Yeah, so if you allocate 50 of your clients, then how do you pay yourself?
So the way that we do this, so essentially we start at, and Andrew is probably the best example of this because he's got the biggest client book. So we start at 150. So when an advisor has 150 clients, they'll bring in an associate.
Yep.
Then depending on how quickly they can grow that book, but where you want to get to is about 225.
Yep.
So as soon as you get to 225, you press the reset button, 75. And I've toyed with these metrics back and forth.
I'm loving the fact you've got an answer
so many,
to the question.
So many times, but you get the pod, the planner and the associate to 225.
Yeah.
Throughout that journey, the associate has been part of the reviews and the new business piece and what have you. So transferring the relationship should be easier.
Yep.
Of that pod, you've got 225 clients. You take 75. And you move those to the associate who has gone through their PY and has become a planner.
Man, your average fees will go up because quite often you're moving the clients on earlier in their journey, yeah?
Yep, great.
Now, that works. I mean, someone like Andrew is an equity holder. That works because it's like, okay, great, a good stuff, right? And I'm building the valuation of this business. But does that mean that in the future that you'll have to open up sort of employee share schemes or something like that progressively?
Look, based on the numbers.
That's a question without notice, by the way.
No, absolutely. And I said I'm an open book and happy to share this stuff. But based on the numbers that we've done, I don't believe so. However, in saying that, for us, I think it's a very, very good mechanism to attract and retain top talent. And if we've got the right people in the business and they want to come on that journey with us and they're committed and they're invested, absolutely, because as I hope I'm unpacking here, but the people are what make the business, right? They're going to either determine your success or not. So from my end, I don't think it needs to be. I think as an industry, that's how it kind of is. And you know, it's quite an interesting thing when you look at it and unpack it. I don't know if there's many other industries out there where in order to retain talent, you kind of have to give them a bit of skin in the game as well too. So kind of still thinking through what that looks like. But
it's just the way it is. I mean, I'm not saying you have to.
Yeah.
I'm just it's PY's tough, right? But you've at least got to, you're one of the few people who said you've got the number, it goes to this, which means you're clearly communicating with the lead advisor. Yep. It's obviously going to impact on the amount of work they have to do, which means there's going to be less amount of work, but there'll be less revenue. But then you're trying to just get higher average fees and get different sorts of clients in through that.
Correct. And it goes even further back than that as well too. So if we're bringing on somebody, not necessarily as an associate, but this could be as an entry-level position as a CSO, we've got a career pathway for them.
Right.
And say, hey, this is what the natural progression looks like if you wanted to become a financial advisor. CSO, CSM, so customer service officer, customer service manager, associate advisor.
And do you have many of those people who are sort of aspirational to keep moving through?
Yeah, we've got three of them.
Okay, so obviously, it's a good ratio.
Yeah, it's decent. So we're backfilling that as well too, because that forms part of the strategy. But yeah, basically we reset that pod back to 150 for the planner.
Yep.
They'll get an associate straight away.
Yep.
The new associate who's started as a planner, they start with 75. When they build that book up to 150, they then get an associate and the system starts again for them.
Given you've been working with an offshoring business, in this case, VBP, for 8 years, that's a long time, right? And you've had continuity doing it. What would be your two or three sort of non-negotiable points to people who are either, one, haven't done it and thinking about it, or two, they just haven't got it right?
Yeah, I mean, look, we learned the hard way and we paid the price. You can't expect to just engage in this type of activity and think it's going to work. It takes time. It takes effort. And what you put in is definitely what you get back out. So you need to have a really clear understanding of the commitment that it's going to take from your end in order to make it work, right? You just can't send an email across on day one and expect these people, you know, whoever your teammates are, to understand what they need to do. You need to invest in them. Spend time with them on teams. You need to have good systems. You need to have good processes. You need to have good documentation. You need to spend time with them on the screen, sharing things. And over time, they do get better and better. But probably the silver bullet from our perspective, and I think this is more so I got sold by VBP at the time rather than it being strategic. I'd love to take credit for this. We actually hired, with our first hire, we hired two people in one go.
They become buddies.
Well, not only do they become buddies, but if something went wrong, and in your case, fortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But if something went wrong, you're not starting from scratch again. So that there was a real game changer for us. Both of them worked out, and that allowed us to build our team. So from that perspective, I think really two key takeouts. If your business can afford it, go for two in one if you're starting out. And the second thing is be prepared to put in the time.
Yeah.
Because the more you put in, the easier it will become over time. It's going to be hard at the start, but definitely put in the effort. And realistically, if you want to scale and you want to grow, you need people around you. And the only way to do that is to invest time and energy into people.
Absolutely. And I think that sage advice around getting always having capacity and having extra people there. So for those of you who keep your eye on your dollars, if a person is $3,000 or $4,000 a month, and you bring that person on and they leave after 8 or 9 months for reasons that are outside of your control and you've got to start again, knocks the hell out of you.
Yep.
If you bring on two and you're probably 6 months, you probably bring them on 6 months in advance, you just got to live with the fact that you're spending, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 times six, 20 grand. So you're spending 20 grand of your, to ensure the outcome of your engine room, which powers your multi-million-dollar turnover business.
Yeah,
it's when you think of it like that, it's so simple. But I'm with you, and we always do twos. It's because you look at the risk management of it. But anyway, thanks for that tip. It's I see people who do one, they it goes well or it doesn't. There's turnover, and they just it's groundhog down. It sucks.
And if it doesn't go right at the start, you've only got one.
Yeah,
I can add 2 years to your time frame.
That's right.
It's really that tough.
And as the leader, your Australian based sort of ARs are sort of assuming that's why they're joining you, right? Yep. Is assuming that's going to work out. So, now you've come out of the AMP environment, and are you still in the well, they don't exist anymore as far as licensing. But who's your license now?
Yeah, so we're still licensed by Acumen. So Acumen. That hasn't really changed. From our perspective, I mean, look, there's obviously a lot of talk around licensee and bits and pieces and all that sort of stuff. From my perspective, I could spend a lot of time, effort, and energy thinking about what that looks like and translate that back to some advantage from a cost perspective or a tech stack or whatever it may be. Or I can take that time, energy, and effort and put it into growing my business. And
yeah,
for us, in the stage of business that we're at, that's a better decision for me to spend my resources on. So it works for us. It was an easy transition from AMP to Acumen. Nothing has really changed too substantially from that perspective. So yeah, we're still licensed by Acumen.
And given the age demographic of your client, you do a lot of life insurance?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. Yep. A lot of insurance.
So I understand life insurance is part of a holistic engagement V. How do you financially justify doing one-off life insurance advice?
Oh, we tend to struggle a little bit with it. If you think about life insurance per se, actually the product itself, relatively speaking, life insurance is quite cheap. It's not until you start to add things on like income protection where the premiums do get kind of hefty, where you can kind of justify the cost associated with it. One of the things that we're quite fortunate about is most of the advice that we give people is holistic.
Yep.
Or it could be a mortgage broking client and you're giving financial advice to them as well too. Or insurance advice, I should say. So from that perspective, at least you're picking up some remuneration somewhere along the line. And if you look at the lifetime value of a client and the opportunities that we have, it's never usually one and done. There's always an opportunity to do more and more. Because of our cost structure, re the support team, we've also got one of our team members in the Philippines is also a power planner as well too.
Yep.
So we can produce insurance-only advice for a very, very small cost to the practice. So we're quite fortunate in that regard. But you know, to a certain extent, you need to take a position and say, hey, is this a loss leader? Knowing that one, we're doing the right thing by the client and facilitating that. But two, we're backing ourselves and saying, hey, if we engage with that client properly at some stage, there's more opportunity further and further down the track. And I'm comfortable with that.
And look, if you're the 175th Minister for Financial Services that has been around in my tenure, listening to this, 80% upfront, 20% ongoing worked. The 60 just
doesn't work.
Doesn't work. It's maths.
Yep.
Right. So I'm not that you're going to roll it back, but it's just a reality. So if you wanted to insure more people, and the insurers want to be, I've seen their numbers. There's just got to be a bit of a move there. Or alternatively, there's got to be a culture of paying for it, which doesn't seem to be with holistic clients. Yes, but one off is very tough. It's just I always ask that question. Now, in relation to investments, given that a lot of your clients are wealth accumulators. Mm-hmm. And they want easy stuff and they're probably time poor. How do you do investments? Do you use SMAs, MDAs? How do you run that side of your business?
So like a lot of advisors, I mean, strategy first.
Yep.
So we're looking at things like goals and working our way backwards, contribution strategies and the like. But purely from an investment perspective, we did go down the pathway and we're still on the pathway of SMAs. So for us, it was really an opportunity to be able to say, hey, how can we get something that's more sustainable for the practice and deliver really good value to clients from an investment perspective while getting them sort of access to world-class investments at the same time.
Yep.
So we did go down the SMA pathway. And what we're doing is we were recommending for clients that wanted to go down this route, we were going down basically 100% of their investment based on their risk profile into an SMA provider. We've changed our stance on that recently. And what we've done is we've pivoted to a core satellite strategy. So we've looked at where the numbers have gone. We've looked at the cost associated with running an SMA and basically said, okay, this is a better decision for our client base. This is a better decision for the longer term outcome and the sustainability of returns. And a lot of that was purely driven by, I guess, two decisions. Firstly, to move towards an SMA, out of the back of COVID, I was looking at portfolios and the realization was, hey, if we want to make a wholesale change, it's going to take us a year plus in order to get around to the whole entire client base. And I felt really uncomfortable with that. Light bulb went off. And then it was like, okay, SMAs are starting to get more and more traction. Let's lean into an SMA.
And what platform are you running on the back of?
Look, predominantly we're using North.
Yep, which is it's like an incumbent. Was Summit the North, I think, from years and years ago?
North, Hub24
yep.
Is the other one that we predominantly use. But in terms of functionality, I tend to find that one is... like it gives everything to us
yep.
as advisors. So it makes our job easier when we're serving clients. So that's the sort of the platform of choice per se. So North is where it's at, SMA provider on there. In terms of performance versus cost, I mean, like any investment thesis and in any investment philosophy, it will be correct in a particular market cycle at a particular point in time. So as the journey continues, as we get more experience as a firm, we've looked at that and said, okay, returns aren't where we expected them to be because the market had shifted. What's the next best step that we can do for our clients? So we've settled on a core satellite approach where 80% will be in a core option like a Vanguard or something equivalent, and the other 20% will be in something that's active like an SMA.
Yeah, and that sort of scratches the itch sometimes for clients as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, from that perspective, we're still trying to chase some alpha with the active approach.
Yeah,
but most of the time we are getting the market rates of return. And I think from the commitment that we make to people as advisors is, look, we're going to look after this whole financial world of yours. There's an expectation that the market has to return a certain number in order for us to hit those goals. And if we get that, fantastic. It's almost a non-conversation point because it's doing what it's doing. The real risk for us, and I guess a lot of advisors out there, is if you don't get the market returns, then what does that then mean downstream? So you can do all of this fantastic work, but if you don't hit the mark with that one thing, you're going to be in trouble long-term. So we looked at it and made that change recently. Well, we're now a core satellite approach.
And having a position piece that helps with bringing new advisors on. So how many in your team here in
So we've got 10.
10 here?
We've got 10 here.
10 here.
And 6 over in the Philippines.
Yep. And when you get together, how do you celebrate? What's a fun time look like?
Yeah, look, for us, it's predominantly around food.
Yep.
You know, being where we are located in Melbourne, there's a lot of good restaurants and stuff like that. But we try and do, there's a couple of sort of things that we do to celebrate as a team. I guess the most obvious one is end of year, so a Christmas lunch. That's pretty straightforward. We do quarterly lunches with the team just to get everybody together. Everybody gets their own birthday day off so they can celebrate it on or around their birthday. We usually do bits and pieces, cupcakes and stuff in the office and things like that. Every year we're doing more and more client events. So this Friday we've got a winery tour coming up. There's a bus coming to pick us up. There's business associates that we're taking. So all of our advice team.
I gave you the whole week to do this podcast and you picked a Tuesday. Yep. Or what are we, Wednesday or Tuesday? I could have done it on a Friday.
Friday I wouldn't have been available.
Oh, you're dead to me.
I'll be on there.
You're dead to me. I could have been at the Yarra Valley. We could have done this over a barrel. It would
have been difficult to try and record this over a few glasses of wine, I'm sure. It would have been more entertaining, no doubt.
Yeah, well, we do edit it. So, so you're doing these client events. Is that a new thing?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously COVID sucked, right?
It's something that we're trying to do more and more so. So this one in particular is more focused on COIs. So we're trying to engage, business associates that refer us business. And then we're trying to expand and how do we do things that are of interest to and of value to clients as well too. So throughout COVID, we're doing a lot of webinars. So they've kind of dropped off a fair bit. We want to start doing more in-person events. As part of that and part of the team sort of growing, we've got a role that we're advertising for. So we're looking at bringing on a marketing manager. We've got a couple of interviews this week as well too. And we're also bringing on another customer service person in mortgage broking. So
if I'm a financial planner, I put my financial planner, aspirational planner hat on. Sometimes things that keep me awake at night is how I get new clients. Okay. So you have a stream, which is people come in for lending, and you've had that for years. You've got centers of influence, which you're spending money on doing, and you're bringing a mortgage a marketing manager in, and you're also doing B2C podcasts for 4 or 5 years. So as the leader of the business, you are doing everything that's in your power to attempt to bring flow of clients in.
Yep. Well, there's more. I don't think there's any right or wrong way other than the way that works. All of our financial advisors are doing some form of formal networking. So they're part of, Andrew and Steph are part of Fresh Networking. So they do that every fortnight. I'm part of CUB Melbourne. So they're a networking group.
You weren't fresh in arms.
I did fresh for a couple of years and then needed to change and pivot. Yep. We're doing some SEO work with our website team.
New website, everyone. And if you're looking at the website, it's only a few months old. It's looking pretty good.
Yeah. Well,
The budget was pretty well blown on Billy's post-production work on touching up his photo. But
It was take some photos and do the best with it to try and touch them up and make us look pretty, right? But new website, SEO. We are leaning into some paid advertising as well too. We're basically.
And have you done that before?
We're trying. Yeah, we have.
A little bit.
Yeah. Not a huge amount of success.
Because cost of acquisition is a really interesting thing, right? So
So we don't talk about it that much. But in a scaling business, cost of new client, lifetime value of client, lifetime value of client financial planning is massive.
Yep.
Right. But financial planners historically haven't viewed the cost of acquisition as a financial instrument. So
yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, I think in other businesses, it's been more front and center because client acquisition has just been, you know, naturally part of what they do. Whereas financial advice, and you look at the history and the heritage of where the industry's come from, we kind of didn't have to worry about that as much. Obviously, the world's changed now and it's front of mind.
Yeah, people are now looking to get new clients. And if I'm looking to, you know, reach out and join you to go join your team, I just go on your new website. Is that right? That's the best way.
Absolutely.
We were talking also, you know, before we started recording around, you know, Ensemble's sort of intention this year is to move from a place where ideas are found to a place where things are implemented. You've got a business coach. But sitting down and sharing your journey with some other advisors who have got that growth mindset is probably something that would also be useful, because sharing mistakes just avoids them, doesn't it?
Well, look, I mean, you know, I can only talk about my experience and stuff, but, you know, and ego aside, and I think I learned this sort of early on, I'd rather learn from someone who's done it, and I don't need to know all the answers and figure out all the mechanics behind it. Just give me the answer so I can move faster.
Yeah.
So completely agree with you. If there's someone out there that's already done it, pick their brain. We're quite good as an industry sharing stuff.
Yep.
Absolutely do it.
Sounds like Billy's going to be attending a couple of these events over the next year or so here in Melbourne. But with that, I'd thank you very much for unpacking your business. You know, you've been going for a while. You've got the marketing, you've got the engine at the back, you've got a career progression. You were one of the few people who talked to me about the mechanics of handing off and handing over in the associate sort of PY model, which is, you know, really impressive. And I look forward to seeing this and touching base over the next couple of years to find out what it is. I'm passionate about lending and mortgage advice. Anyone who knows me knows that's an economic reality for me. I think that more practices that embrace that are going to become more relevant and sort of, you know, serve more Australians. And you've got 1,620 to go to hit your PHAC.
Yeah, no, I'm chipping away at it. But no, Andrew, thanks for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully there's a bit of stuff to think about for people who are listening. And yeah, if anyone wants to reach out or what have you to have a chat about anything that we've spoken about, always happy to take a phone call and share some of my experiences.
Thanks, Billy, mate. And all the best of success with your business. Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Thanks.